I thank you all, and I feel somewhat guilty in having to stop the formal discussion at this point. But on the other hand, I'm extremely happy that the level of excitement and fervor and the tenor of the conversation is such that even though a formal discussion may have stopped, the ongoing dialogue, which will come out of this session, will continue. Let me, in closing, start as I have begun this morning, which is on behalf of Father Dosal Singh. It has always been our sense that the spirit of Gobind Sadhan to bring an incredibly diverse group of people together on a common platform to understand that indeed we are part of one community. And when we deal with issues of defining a body politic, for those who are even conscious of the term body politic, it is first and foremost essential, from what our dear friends in Russia recognize as a spiritual perspective, that spiritually we are all part of one human race, as Gobind Singh said, but there is what I would call a theology of community, a sense that we are not, though we may represent separate constituencies, that the powers that be cannot divide a certain spirit within us. And if we are able to join in that spirit and have an understanding and a recognition of each other's place and each other's rights and each other's needs within the world, then no power on earth can change that pattern and that path which will ultimately lead to peace and to justice. I might say that long ago I chose this title, and Naresh and I had a bit of a talk about it, when I said promoting the underclass. He said, do you mean we're going to commercially promote the underclass? And I said, no. I said, all of us who have been to school started as underclassmen or underclass people. We started in kindergarten or the first grade, and maybe we were teased or even taunted or hazed by upperclassmen. But we all knew, and we tolerated, because we knew we one day would be those upperclassmen who in turn, should we so choose, can tease and taunt those beneath us. And yet, the poor are a permanent underclass, which our systems have in some ways consciously created and maintained. And so the term promoting the underclass was an intentional one, so that we create, if we are to look at democracy, if we are to look at justice in the world, we must indeed understand that we find ways to promote the underclass, so that there is no underclass. We are all one class. We are all in the same school of life. We all face the same challenges together. We may be in taking a slightly different path on our course, and as our dear friend Dr. Zakharov spoke this morning so eloquently, nature is incredibly diverse, and to assume that we will achieve sameness is not a realistic or even an enviable goal. God forbid there would ever be another one like me, that we would revel in the diversity of our species, and yet among that diversity there's a human ecology which has totally been ignored, which has been exploited and continues to be. And so if we were to look at a concept of democracy, it must start with a spiritual understanding. I sometimes laugh. I have come to the point of saying the age of reason is dead, long live reason. Because everywhere I look, there is nothing reasonable in the world. Everything I see is unreasonable in the relationship between people, between man and woman, in the relationship in how we treat our children and how we raise our youth, in the relationships between the poor and the rich. There is nothing reasonable
in the world.
And so I say the age of reason is dead, and long live reason, because it provides an opportunity to usher in a true state of enlightenment. The age of enlightenment made an incredibly pretentious assumption that human logic was greater than the, and I don't mean this by politically saying the design or the order of its creator. And several hundred years later, we see the result of that ignorance, of trying to ostracize God in the name of religious bigotry, to trying to ostracize God from society in the name of the injustice and the oppression created in the name of God, which has nothing to do with God. And so I laugh at those, quote, civilized nations who have decimated every social institution, not only within their own country, but within the countries that they have colonized. And I accept the concept of internal colonization. That each one of those civilized nations, now that they have decimated the social institutions, are once more debating the issue of religion in the public square, of once more debating the issue of values in public life. And so they now coin the term civil society, which they now impose on those countries who have long understood the concept of dharma or dharam, of an integral system of values which does not separate, bifurcate, or in any way segregate that which is the spiritual value from one's work ethic, with the absolute debacle in terms of corporate ethics in the United States. You have course at Harvard and MIT and Wharton on the need for spiritual values. And so we see that those who have adopted on CNBC and the term pundit and guru to speak to their political divines have once again re-exported those terms to India and to other countries. And we, in the process of forgetting our traditional gurus, if I may say, and in the process I submit to you that we can and we must promote the underclass. We must and we can understand we are part of one human family. And I do and must submit to you that we can and we will. And I am very particular and proud to say that under the guidance and the vision of Baba Vilsasay, who is, I will use a term, he is the visionary for civil society. He is the visionary for development. Who can show us how to merge values with work? Who can show us that there is no such class or nation, as he says, which we call the poor? There is no permanent state, political or otherwise, which we call poverty. It is simply a temporary state that anyone, even the richest, can fall into. It is the state of spiritual poverty. Perhaps, as we said, we must understand that development, to use a business term, is not a value proposition. If you understand cost-benefit analysis, if a business looks to invest, it turns its profitability as a value proposition. Perhaps we will learn that development is a values proposition. And without those values at the heart of our sense of development, be it personal, social, or political, development will not work. We will continue in our endless downward spiral. The world will not cease. Humanity will not be overcome. Perhaps it will, and I don't even want to consider this. I don't want to consider a greater catastrophe because I feel that we are dealing with enough catastrophic problems at this point. When will we learn that we must humble ourselves? And I will use a spiritual term before that power which is God, to understand that in fact there is a power which is greater than our feeble little minds. And perhaps, as we all come from today, we can sit, think, go and be inspired by Babaji's words and come back tomorrow and face the public and hopefully put on the media who will carry a message, a positive message, that we here are committed to overcoming poverty, not to helping the poor, albeit we will help the poor, but we are committed to overcoming, if not eradicating, poverty. We cannot eradicate any natural differences where someone may be at the beginning on the first rung of the ladder and someone may be on the 10th. That is, on one hand, what some may term natural selection, what others may term karma. We're not dealing with that, but at least we can have a level of playing field where access to power, access to the starting line, where everyone is at least allowed to run the race, regardless of where they finish. And so, I'm sorry to wax philosophically, and I'm sorry to be so passionate, but all I can say is you're at fault with all your passionate speeches and all your empowered talks. It's rubbed off on someone like me. And so to close, I must take all that energy which you have passed to me through your talks and share it with you again. And let me again thank you from the bottom of my heart that this just be a beginning of these types of forums which will in fact change the course of civilization. On behalf of Babaji and all in Govind Sahib who work so hard to offer such forums to you, I want to thank you so much for your time. What we are going to do is we will have some tea, share a little more, and then Babaji will see Babaji. Babaji will see
treated each year. 10% of the cost of the project is borne by village and the school. The cost of one drinking water facility is 100,000 rupees, about $2,500. Now this slide shows that from a modest beginning of 180 farmers, today Nestle helps almost 90,000 farmers. Some of these farmers have 100 cows. And each cow gives 30 liters of milk. I once went to a competition. The best cow gave 52 liters of milk. So Nestle is helping farmers to improve their income on a daily basis. The conclusion is that if there's a firm which does assured marketing of agricultural commodities, it helps to increase the farm income. It provides steady and reliable income for the farmers. It engineers technical improvements and higher productivity. Similar and far-reaching results can be achieved by marketing of fruits and vegetables. In India, 40% of the fruits and vegetables perish and do not reach the consumer. This results in higher consumer prices and low farm incomes. Investments are needed in the cold chain, in supermarket outlets, and to search for international markets for fruits and vegetables. If we do so, we can create a win-win-win situation for the farmers, for the consumers, and the wholesale marketers also. Thank you, and I would again like to thank the Govind Southern Institute Forum on Development and Civil Society for giving me an opportunity of being here with you. I would also like to thank Clara Singh for the marvelous translation that she did. Thank you.
We have, through which we work in a very small slum in the middle of Delhi, and we try to do some what we might call developmental work, whereby we try to imbue a sense of self-esteem, a sense of self-reliance economically and otherwise, and a sense of confidence among youth in that little basti that we work in. I think it has been very illuminating for me to be here, and also to hear that in Russia also you have such big differences between the rich and the poor as we have in India. And for me, not being an economist or any person qualified in that field, I think other than just a matter of wealth creation, it's also a matter of wealth distribution that we need to think of, and also of some attitudinal changes. So we need to create kind of a level of discomfort among the rich in the country, at least in our country. You mentioned that in Russia people are not so given to sharing or to giving, and I think to some extent that could also apply to other countries and other peoples where they have sort of disassociated themselves from their cultural moorings and cultural rootings. So one of the things that we did in our organization was to conduct some very intensive value workshops in elite institutions in Delhi, like the IITs and JNUs and other colleges, etc., and create a sense of awareness. And we found that youth there, who tomorrow would go out and be holding positions of some responsibility in the country, how they would deal with them. And we found that they were wanting to do something, but they did not know how and where. And when given an opportunity, they would like to share in that, and this is what we try to do, whereby trying to create to make the wall between the rich and the poor a little bit more porous, so that more give and take happens. Also, I think something is lacking in our education, which is which has been talked about very often. Youth come out with certificates which can be exchanged for a job which will give them some money, but it's not necessary that they have developed within themselves so as to create a healthier and a better society, both for themselves and for others. So what is required is to somehow also induct some kind of value education. We've seen this wonderful film that you showed of how Baba Virsa Singh has been trying to inculcate values of hard work, of self-esteem, self-pride among people, so that they can with their own hands create something and share. And in our culture in India, and that applies to every other culture, there are many methods of sharing. There is the concept of dan, of giving, and there are so many rituals which are rituals and festivals where emphasis is given on sharing. So if those values are understood and if those are revived with a sense of commitment, then a lot more of give and take will happen. And the other thing that we tried to do was to create a sense of aspiration among the economically lesser of people. We found that when we started this small little work in this basti, people, the youth and children and their parents weren't very bothered about coming to this center where we were offering them on a platter certain services and certain skills, because we think that they felt that their lot will not change. They will remain where they are. But once, after a lot of coaxing and a lot of patient work with all our colleagues, one of whom is sitting here, once they started coming, then some of them, not all, but some of them started realizing that they can change their lot, and that they can, by the skills that they learn, because we do give them some vocational skills also, some of them began to get some reasonably good jobs, which was a transformation for themselves, for their family around them, and for the little basti in which they live. We also try to make these very youth, those who are a little bit more educated and a little bit more skilled than others, to be teachers for the others within the same area, so that they feel a sense of being catalysts of change themselves. So this kind of self-pride, the sense of responsibility that comes within them, which gets generated within them, is a, on a very micro level. It's, this session is on micro business. It's on a micro level, a sort of a transformation creating process. And we feel that these little segments within this micro area will become catalysts of change in other areas wherever they go. So I think this is how much I need to say for this time, for this moment. And if there's anything, if anyone feels like asking any questions, we are here to answer. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ruslan.
Just a short remark. We appreciate, highly appreciate the speeches and reports on the topic today. But we suggest, I mean our group, we discussed this topic, Dr. Tim Shilling and Raisa Tsargulov and me, maybe it will be more productive to change the paradigms of discussion and use, instead of poor and rich, the terms spiritual and creative and the positive spiritualness. You know that in the behavior of rich people who do not care the interests of poor people, and while developing the industry in anti-ecological way, they will that can bring to death both rich and poor people. And so maybe it will be more productive to change the paradigm and use this expression, spiritual, creative, or spiritualness. What do you think about this?
I would agree with you. I think those issues are very central to humanity, to human happiness, and to good relationship between all sections of society.
Здесь был задан такой вопрос, что более продуктивно было бы обсуждать сегодня проблемы не в парадигме богатые и бедные, а в парадигме творчески духовные и бездуховные. Потому что мы видим, что поведение богатых, которые при разработке промышленных ресурсов, ну, ведут такую антиэкологическую политику, это все может привести к катастрофе как бедных и богатых. Поэтому, вот, ну, я думаю, дальше как это предложение.
I think that too much emphasis has been laid on financial development. Maybe the time has come to correct the balance.
Я думаю, что очень большое внимание было уделено, уделяется финансовому положению. Наверное, нужно найти какой-то баланс.
In Punjab, when we tried to improve the productivity by using too much fertilizer and too much pesticide, the soil got poisoned.
В Пенджабе, когда мы использовали чересчур много удобрений, химических удобрений и пестицидов, конечно, земля портилась.
When the rain comes, the urea, it goes into the soil. When people drink water, they are getting fertilizer and pesticide.
Когда мы удобряем мочевины, конечно, она с дождем проникает в почву. И затем таким же образом она проникает в растения и в человеческие организмы.
I think Dr. Kim Shlin is correct. Education from school must start. People should have the correct mindset of a balanced between spiritual and financial development. Maybe Babaji's method is right. He works with his hands and he takes the spirit of God.
Я думаю, действительно настало время сбалансировать финансовые аспекты с духовными. И Бабаджи советует всем работать своими руками и обращаться к Богу, чтобы принять духовное богатство.
Dr. Ronkiram would like to add.
Thank you, Ralph. I made a very valid point, and he started the ball rolling. Being an other fellow from Punjab, I would like to draw your attention, along with the critical attention of Benz, that Punjab is now passing through a very, very crucial phase. Agriculture, which, as he rightly said, should be developed. It has been developed during that great Green Revolution period. And now, situation has come to such a pause that the farmers are committing suicide.
I think side by side she should translate and she will forget.
The translation working now. Is the trans? Are you able to hear the English translation?
Now, the question comes, there was a time when the people should be motivated, as Baba Vishwa Singh has shown in the picture by Rasji, to work hard. But now the question is that people are ready to work on the land. But land is not, you know, being giving them the enough. Why? Two aspects are highly important. Number one, in Punjab we have seen that land, the agricultural land, is being grabbed by the real estate. The land is used for raising highest multi-industrial complex. Whether the industry is coming to Punjab or not is a different thing, but at least new colonies are coming up. Professor Vivek has raised a very important issue. The person should be, you know, taken out of the agriculture and involved into the more industrial setup. But that actually in the name of industrialization in Punjab, exactly but need to be happened, is not happening. So in this case, now we have to see another issue to which Vance has already mentioned. The water table has gone deep, really very deep. It is really very difficult for a poor farmer having 5 acres of land to install a deep tube well, which cost minimum 1 to 2 lakh rupees. Even if he can help to, you know, generate that much water from the underground, the amount of getting that water is tremendous. So in this way, the small farmers are being tucked out. They are being relegated to the periphery. In Punjab, a large farming is coming up. Farmers, not by the farmer themselves, but by some big industrial houses who did not know the ABC of farming. This is called a collect farming. So in this sense, we have to relocate, we have to think it very critically, where Punjab is heading, the greater contribution made by the farmers, why they are committing suicide in such a large numbers, and the industry is not actually taking place. How many examples of Nestle are there in Punjab? People started growing grapes. Nobody was buying them. People started growing apricot. Nobody was buying them. People started growing now lot many other things. But there was no. There was a company which said grow tomatoes. People, you know, bought costly seeds. They grow tomatoes. Nobody came to buy them. So they said we are fed up. So at present, there is a lot of controversy going in Punjab, whether we should continue with the rotation of wheat and rice, or we should go for diversification. And one school of thought in Punjab is hampering upon the point. The farmer should go for diversification. You know, diversification from where that will come, it's again very much problem. Another problem, I will just finish after that. Now, we have seen that in Punjab, all those infesticide, insecticide, pesticide, because why I was using the word pesticide, Punjab land is addicted. Punjab youth is addicted. In Punjab, another problem comes, infanticide. You know, the girl child is being killed in the bomb. This is a social problem. So on this issue, we are being told that there is a genetically modded crops. So now people are going for that. There is a lot of controversy again in Punjab whether we should go for genetically, you know, modded agriculture or not. So these issues need to be critical intervention. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I would beg the indulgence of the participants. And just at a time when things are warming up to dialogue, I ask, which is at least my goal whenever we have such a forum, to move from presentation to dialogue. I would simply ask that we take that dialogue and continue it at our luncheon tables outside and perhaps come back with renewed zeal to push through the afternoon. I want to thank all of you. It has been a wonderful session despite our technical glitches, and look forward to even more sterling performances this afternoon. Yes. Yes. Yes.
I agree with them entirely. Farmers, if they grow tomato, if they grow apricot, if they grow grapes, they should have a contract. And what Mr. Naresh Singh said in the morning, that contract should be in favor of the poor.
Если фермер выращивает фрукты или овощи, они должны иметь контракты. Только тогда он будет иметь выгоду от этого и не пострадает.
The second thing which he said correctly about problem of farmer suicide, again, education will take care. If the child is educated, he can get job outside the farm.
Насчет самоубийства фермеров, можно посоветовать им, чтобы они обучали своих детей в школе. На основе этого работу где-нибудь в другом месте.
About the genetically modified crops. This year in Punjab, they grew BT cotton. There was no use of pesticide, no farmer committed suicide, and production was four times higher.
And so the title of the panel, the first panel this afternoon, is going to be the empowerment, the property rights issues revolving around the
board.
And one thing I would ask is to distinguish this session, this time, from many other such seminars, is that each of us give thought to what is the most important point that came from the discussion, and that by tomorrow we are able to digest those points and present one key action step that we would agree present that to the public tomorrow afternoon. So let us keep that in mind as we discuss and deliberate. I would ask the co-chairs, Ranjit Singh Kala and Irrigation, to convene this session, to open this session, and turn it over to my esteemed friend and colleague, Ranjit Kala.
Thank you very much, Ralph.
Спасибо, Mr. Ralph.
It's a great pleasure to be here today
and participate
in this seminar which is taking place. The discussions that took place this morning
were
very enlightening and also very encouraging. And we hope that this afternoon's discussions also would similarly be of a very high order. Now, the subject that we are going to discuss this afternoon is property rights.
And
I think there is much that can be said on the subject. But before we begin to discuss property rights, I think it is also important to understand the context in which we are discussing these rights. The context is
India,
and also the other part of the focus that we should keep on is what about poverty in India? What about the poor people? Because
rights
in one direction may also be a kind of a blockade to the improvement of rights of the poor.
Just to give you
a bit of background, there is, if you look at the national sample survey organization, the NSSO, which is a very prestigious organization,
its
figures are usually relied upon by the government and by most of other organizations. Now, if you see their figures,
you
have approximately 22% of our population
still living below the poverty line.
Now, what do we mean by the poverty line? The poverty line is ₹211. That means the monthly consumption of goods has translated to ₹211 in the rural areas and ₹454 as translated in the urban areas. Now, of this figure, 75% of the poor live in the rural areas. And therefore, you can well imagine that any thinking that we have, for example, on poverty, property rights, should translate itself to say property rights as regards land, as regards housing, would necessarily have to take into account this figure. Because unless you remove or improve the poverty that exists in the rural areas, it's going to be very difficult to exercise any kind of intellectual thinking as far as property rights are concerned. Now, the problem is
the poverty in India
is because of various factors. One of them is primitive methods of agriculture.
Secondly,
you can say that the holdings are extremely low.
Now,
when we talk of property rights, we should also consider that the average holding is, say, an acre and a half
of the bulk of the poor,
which means that you have a sustainable life system becomes a very difficult task.
Now, if you
were to see, look at the GDP figures of India. Now, whereas 75% of the population of India depends on agriculture,
agriculture constitutes only 22%
of the GDP. And if you were to further look at the figures, far from developing,
I mean, some years ago, the figure of agriculture development was 4.8. It's now down to 2.2. In fact, some people say it is just about even. So, while in one sector, in industry and services, development is taking place at a fast pace. The corresponding development in this area is more or less stagnant.
Now,
if you have this framework in your mind, and then you come in terms of property rights, we should be careful when we emphasize these property rights, that what we mean is, what do we do about the bulk of the population in India? What do we do about the
75%?
Now, it is quite obvious that if these figures are to improve, we have to do something about small land holdings, we have to do something about making agriculture sustainable, we have to do something about rural housing. Because without these factors coming into being, including things like providing remunerative prices for agricultural products, we are not going to solve the problem. Therefore, if we talk of property rights, we will therefore only be talking of property rights in the urban context. That is, I have a house in, say, Vickers Colony. What should be my rights as far as this house is concerned? I have property, say, in some other areas, on some other small town. Therefore, when we are addressing this problem, we are only talking of a very small segment.
Now,
the government has undertaken various schemes. I won't go into them. The latest one, of course, is the Rural Employment Guarantee Bill, which covers 200 of the 600 districts of India, and where 100 days of minimum wages are guaranteed for every household. But this is just touching the periphery of the problem. So while we are discussing this subject, I think we should also keep in mind that we have to look at the very basic causes why this poverty exists. At the same time, there is also a very fast increasing what we call the middle class in India.
You'd
be interested to know that the time of independence in 1947, this class practically didn't exist. Either it's rich, this middle class is growing, is also a very positive sign. This middle class is also now demanding that laws be changed, property laws be amended, restrictions be removed. For example, I think they are the most vocal when it comes to, say, the removal of, say, urban land ceiling. These are also people who are now in a position not only to take the lead, but also push up the others because of the employment opportunities which has opened up.
So,
while we are talking of property rights, I will once again flag these issues for you for your discussions. But this is not only the property right that one can think of, because this is as far as it relates to physical property. What about intellectual property rights? After all, a man's knowledge or a woman's knowledge is equally valuable. Why should this right not be protected?
And I think now in India there's a greater awareness about the protection of intellectual property rights. The laws in this sector are still in its infancy. I mean, they are not very, not very well developed. But there is a need to look into this area as well. Particularly, because in the world today, we are also moving rapidly towards, each country is moving rapidly towards concretizing on intellectual property rights. And therefore, if we are to do this, we have to look into this sector. The government is very aware of this. They have recently set up what is known as a knowledge commission. One of the tasks of the knowledge commission is to determine how we can protect this move, how we can enhance the quality of the knowledge that prevails. After all, if you see, some of the Indians who have gone to the US, for example, they have done exceedingly well in this area. They have won Nobel Prizes. They have come up with solutions which have defied the world. So, why can't we do the same here? And why can't we enhance our knowledge? I think this is also an area where we need to look at, and look at very carefully of how we can improve our situation. With these thoughts, I will stop because I think we have enough on the table, and I would request my co-chair, he can also contribute. But if later there is a requirement for from my side to intervene or to speak again, I would be very happy to do so. If there are any questions which any participant would like, I would also be very happy to answer to my question. Thank you very much.
I would now request our dear colleague from Moscow, to share his not just thoughts but his experience.
Уважаемые коллеги,
respected colleagues,
тема затронута чрезвычайно важная.
Theme which was touched is very important, and how best it could be realized in the today's
world. Как известно, проведена приватизация,
as we well know,
we are talking a lot about privatization,
which is affecting our lives.
Сейчас как бы создан механизм рыночной продажи
земли.
Жилищным имуществом.
And property rights in respect of housing has been established.
Четвертая часть гражданского кодекса.
And civic codex has been
интеллектуальной собственности.
And for personal property.
Не только наших, но и зарубежных экспертов.
And with the help of foreign specialists,
часть, которая действительно, как бы, в общем-то, разрешает все проблемы, связанные с интеллектуальной собственностью в России.
And all problems are being looked into as far as
важные, заметные меры.
Intellectual rights are also concerned.
Какая-то тенденция к улучшению как бы обозначилась.
There has been a tendency how better to understand the situation.
Существующих мероприятий и в рамках существующей нескорректированной системы
existing structures
and the need to
how to improve them is being taken care of.
Развитие демократии,
the development of
democracy,
human rights
важные,
are very important
ценности. values. И, безусловно, человечество должно хранить и укреплять эти ценности.
Human
Но в то же время, сегодняшние направленности развития
человека,
оно должно быть в значительно большей степени социально ориентировано.
And they must be, вот я хочу перевести цитату socially oriented.
Одного из наиболее дальновидных западных политологов Збигнева Бжезинского, который жестко укоряет апологетов формально-демократических реформ. Он говорит, что поспешное насаждение демократии в отсутствии социально развитого и политически зрелого гражданского общества, скорее всего, послужит целям радикального популизма.
И то это правда
популизма, сегодня пропаганда демократии должна быть напрямую увязана с усилиями, направленными на устранение крайней бедности и постепенное сокращение глобального неравенства.
Policy should be directed for the eradication of mass poverty.
Сокращению глобального неравенства. Вот у нас провели в России очень много демократических реформ.
In our Russia we have carried out a lot of democratic reforms.
Да, вы бедны. Да, часто вам нечего есть, но зато вы свободны. А кому диктат нищеты, хуже любых других диктатов. И пока не преодолена крайняя бедность, говорить о правах человека крайне сложно. Сейчас я постараюсь вкратце сформулировать, которую, на наш взгляд, предстоит реализовывать всему миру. О чем идет речь? Мир раздирается целым комплексом глобальных проблем. Нищета, социальное неравенство, экологические проблемы, преступность, наркомания, терроризм.
Все
это проблемы.
Poverty and,
мир пытается с ними бороться.
And it is trying to tackle them.
Бороться с ним точно.